وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. Once again, سلام عليكم جميعا ورحمة الله وبركاته. The topic for today is video gaming, and I think it's an important topic, especially if you have children and teenagers at home, and video gaming has become very much a part of life today. And there is a multi-billion dollar industry that also supports gaming and you know, creates new games. And one of our struggles is, first of all, to understand what sort of games are out there. Number two, what are the concerns that we have with some of these games? And number three, how to set limits. And number four, how to talk to our children about those limits. Now, I will say one thing, that given that I am not a gamer, a lot of the information that I'll be sharing with you is based on what I've heard from young people, what I have researched for myself. And I even actually had to go on YouTube and look at some of the games there to get a little bit of an idea of what actually is involved when somebody is playing one of these games. At any point in the conversation today, if you have to ask a question, please feel free. You don't have to wait up until the end. And we also have some notes that we will be following up on the screen. So if you don't have a copy, do let us know, and you know, you can get a copy, inshallah. All right, so to start off, I'll just give you the outline for today. The first is introduction to gaming itself and the gaming industry. Secondly, some gaming statistics in Canada and how it's affected Canadian families. Thirdly, the impact of gaming. And in particular, I'll want to talk about, one, how it impacts our quality of life, or the quality of life of the family and the child. Number two, how it impacts our psychology, and how we are thinking differently now, depending on how much gaming the children do. And number three, its impact on spirituality and ethics, its impact upon our faith. And just some things for us to think about when we allow our children to use video or computer games. I also want to talk about something called a gaming disorder. The World Health Organization, WHO, this year in June 2018, they actually came up with this term, gaming disorder. Like, people have different types of disorders. Sometimes they have eating disorders, they have gambling disorders. Now they're recognizing a disorder called a gaming disorder. We'll look at it practically as well. You know, what are some of the signs you see in your child where you should be having alarm bells and saying, we need to have a conversation about gaming? Setting limits. And when we talk about limits, what kind of limits are we talking about? Is it just time limits? Or is it other limits are also involved in there as well? And then finally, the one that you know, is the most difficult one, is working with gaming addicts. So it's one thing to talk to a child before they have entered the world of gaming, or before they are heavily involved in it. But let's say you already have a child, or you already know somebody who's heavily involved in it. How do you claw back? And how do you bring it to the normal limits? It's a very difficult struggle to have. But I will share with you some tips that I hope will help you, inshallah, in being able to do that. So let's start with a little bit of introduction to video gaming. Okay? A very basic definition there, it's a game that's displayed on a screen, whether it is, you know, a small screen, a big screen, computer screen, television screen, and a means for interacting with that screen. So a console, or you're able to touch the screen itself, or there is some other thing in your hand by which you are interacting with that screen. Now, important for us to keep in mind that video games are played on various platforms, okay? Personal computers make up 41% of video games. Smartphones make up 36% of time people play video games on smartphone. Dedicated game consoles, another 36% as well. So dedicated game consoles would be something like Xbox or PlayStation, right? Or Nintendo, for example. Wireless devices like your tablets, for example, or some other wireless devices. Handheld systems, I don't know what they use right now, but I think given Most of us who are here, you'd remember Game Boy, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's an example of a handheld system. And VR devices, virtual reality devices. The reason I bring up this statistic is sometimes we may think that if I don't have a gaming console at home, if I don't have, for example, a PlayStation at home, then my kids are not video gaming. It's important to recognize that video gaming also happens on phones, and it also happens on tablets as well. Secondly, video games have various genres. There are various types of video games out there. Okay, so Candy Crush, for example, is a very basic example of a video game. You've got shooter video games. Some of you might know some names of shooter video games. Okay, Fortnite, for example. You've heard of Fortnite? Yeah. I don't know if somebody hasn't heard of Fortnite. Call of Duty, for example, that's a shooter video game. There's some action or action adventure video games. If you've heard of Grand Theft Auto, GTA, at some point was a big thing, or maybe still is. There's sports games like FIFA. A lot of kids play FIFA. Role-playing games, there's adventure games, there's racing like Formula One, there's fighting games, there's strategy games. There are different types of genres out there. Video games may be played locally, so they're just playing against a computer, for example, or against the screen itself or the tablet itself. Or, more popular, it's played over a network, right? And it's an ability to connect with people over the network. I remember after a summer camp, people had made new friendships. They were going home. And in my times, I would say, give me your phone number and I'll call you and we'll talk on the phone. You know, I saw one young kid tell the other young kid, well, you know, here's my Fortnite handle. I'll see you there in 1 hour. Right? So it's they network with people they know over these games, but they also network with people we don't know. And they don't know either over these games. And that can be a concern for us. 45% of gamers in America are women. So I know that sometimes we think that only boys are into gaming. Girls are not into gaming. And, well, actually, girls are also into gaming. I was during Arba'een, I was traveling. I was in a city. And a brother there, we're having conversations. He says to me that at my work, I have a colleague there. So I asked her when the weekend was coming, what are you doing this weekend? And she said, I am gaming. I said, yeah, but besides gaming, what else are you doing this weekend? She said, that's what I'm doing this weekend. And they actually, it was a couple, and they bought a home. No furniture in the house, right? Nothing, absolutely. Took the sitting room. Put two cubicles in there so that they couldn't see each other. And husband and wife, like every free moment, like from Friday night till Monday morning or Sunday evening late, that's all they do. There are no friends that come at home. Nothing is cooked at home. Pizza gets delivered at home. But that's all they do. Okay? So 45% of gamers are women. So, you know, if you have a daughter, that's something that still might pertain to you. The average age of a gamer is 34 years old. Okay, that's important to keep in mind as well. I'll show you another statistic. It says in Canada, it's 36 years old. And that's important to keep in mind. So gaming is not something that only affects our teenagers. Right? It affects our youth. It affects us as well. As parents sometimes, older than parents. Okay, so that's something to keep in mind. It might be something that I'm concerned about for my children. It might be something I'm concerned about for myself or my brother or, you know, somebody even older than me. Okay. Statistics on video gaming, it's hard to actually find proper statistics that, you know, you can rely upon. So I actually picked up something from the Vanier Institute for Family. Their statistics go back to 2013. So one thing to keep in mind is that whatever numbers you see there, 2018 means a lot more than that, okay? Number one, 48% of households in Canada say that they have a gaming console in there. So half of the households in Canada have a gaming console in their home. The average age of people who are involved in video gaming is 36 years of age. The amount of money that's generated from video gaming is how much? $2.3 billion. I looked it up for 2017. That's just in Canada. It was $3.7 billion. Not million, billion dollars. Why am I emphasizing this? The reason I'm emphasizing this is we've got to appreciate that the industry is an industry. And the people in there are very smart. They pay money. And they actually make these games to be addictive. They actually hire professionals. They'll hire psychologists. They will hire ex-gamers to say, how can we make this game so that when the parent comes, I mean, they're not thinking, or maybe they're thinking like that, but this is the result you're going to see. When the parent comes to the child and says, time is up, the child's going to say what? 15 more minutes. And when the parent comes and turns off the console, the child's going to do what? Throw a tantrum. Get angry. Get frustrated. Because they're addicted to it the way a person is addicted to heroin, for example, right? They've designed the games to be addictive. They know a child's psychology, right? And the numbers speak for themselves. $3.7 billion. 64% of men and 35% of women surveyed in 2013 say they played video games. 37%, so close to 40% now, of boys aged 7 to 12, that's how young, playing video games at least or almost daily, right? And this statistic over here is 108 minutes, average amount of time spent playing video games per day by Canadians. 108 minutes is around 2 hours of time spent every day playing video games. So it's a big part of their lives, and it also shapes and affects what's going to happen in the future as well. Okay. Now, the impact of gaming. Now, I'm going to show you extreme cases. It doesn't mean everybody is in such a case, or if you have a child who's gaming, this is what they're doing. But I just want to show you what happens when there are no limitations which are set. And we just kind of let them game because of what? Because, you know, we don't have to worry about it at that time. Okay? So just let you watch this. There we go.
I enjoy gaming more than I enjoy life. Gaming is simple and rewarding. People care about me there more than in the real world. And I'm good at it. I've had a lot of opportunities to succeed in the real world, but I passed them up, and I feel like it's kind of hopeless now. In the back of my head, I can notice my life is degrading. It just makes me want to play more, because then I don't have to think about it as much. A day in the life for me, I generally wake up at 4 p.m. because I was up all night gaming the night before. I'll probably eat once a day just to get it over with. I don't get as hungry when I'm gaming. My body goes to the wayside. I'll only get up to go to the bathroom. I pretty much will game until I have to go to sleep, and maybe even 24 hours. And even then, I'll still try and stay a little bit longer. And then just repeat the same process all over again. Game all day until the sun comes up, all night. If I do have weed, I'll smoke it pretty much all day, every day. You get more immersed into the game when you're high. When I first started playing, it was always male characters. But as I played longer, I started changing all my characters to the female persona. And it's just something new and exciting. At times, my characters have been considered some of the best in the world. People fear my character. They might even look up to it. It makes me feel like all the time wasn't such a waste after all. Right now, my dream is kind of shifting because I realize that being a professional gamer is highly unlikely. In the past year or two, I've really felt like my life is wasting away. It frightens me because I've been living online for the past 10 years. I do believe I have a problem with gaming.
Okay, well, glad to meet you. Define the problem. What do you think your problem is?
I think that I'm just not motivated to do anything in the real world anymore because I've just achieved so much online that if I gave up now, all of that would feel like a waste.
Contrast your experience.
All right, so I just have a few questions for you if you heard that clip. Number one, why was gaming so interesting to him? It's easy and, he said it was simple and
rewarding.
Right? I mean, there are certain things you do. When you do them, you get rewarded right away. You go up a level, you get to collect these things, your friends give you high fives, for example. Very simple and rewarding as compared to real life, which can be very complicated and the rewards don't come right away. What were some problematic behaviors that he recognized himself when he was engaged in gaming? Sorry? Yeah, he was lonely. He was just in front of the computer, though he was connecting with other people, but not in real life, in the virtual life.
He can't be connected with the others, so he'll need them himself.
Correct. What else?
Like, to eat.
Yeah, no time to eat, not eating really, because more focused on the game, right? What else?
Addictive,
right? So not able to stop it. It's just, no matter, you know, realizing that it's harmful, but still not able to control it. Yes?
Smoking,
right? Yeah, so just not just smoking, but at some point if he had weed, then he would, you know, smoke weed as well because he played better when he was high. What else? Yes?
His life is not composite. He's sitting all night, so waking up and the days is sleeping or doing nothing.
Correct, so he is up all night and then during the day he's sleeping, so no proper sleep pattern and not getting enough sleep as well and not sleeping at night, right? And what's the biggest problem he recognized right now that he's not able to leave gaming? He said it towards the end. Correct, so he can't, his age is 23, he hasn't achieved much up until that age, but you know, if you told him, well, why don't you do this, what would he say? Like, why don't you go and study, or why don't you go and work, or run a business, or do something with your life? What did he say? He said he just wasn't motivated to do anything in the real world, right? Okay, so this is one extreme case, right? What are some things that you have noticed in people who, you know, have a problematic use of gaming? Anything besides what's been mentioned over here?
Bad behavior.
Okay, yeah. So it sometimes does bring about some bad behavior. Sorry?
They don't know how to connect with people.
They don't know how to connect with people. It's very difficult. They're very kind of edgy, sometimes agitated. Very difficult to get them to sit in family gatherings. It's like, okay, when is this done? So I can go back to doing my thing.
Yeah.
I remember it was here, you know, that once I was walking by and I saw a young child and, you know, they're supposed to say salam to me and they kind of were playing a game and they looked up to me and I said salam and they said salam to me, but then they were, you know, kind of, okay, I want to go back to my game, you know? It's like, I don't want to continue this conversation, right? They lose sense of their surrounding, you're right, very much so. You know, something can be happening around them, you know, they don't know about it. What else have you noticed that you think is problematic? Okay, so I'm going to mention some things that I think we need to think about before, you know, we give these games to our children. And the reason I'm raising it, number one, is that it's not just about limiting how much time they spend on there, but the other concerns that we also have. And it's not only about saying, okay, we're going to limit your time, but no, we also want you to do other things as well at the same time, right? So I've broken it down into three parts, and we'll get started with the first one. Oops, sorry, let's go. So first, the impact of gaming on the quality of life. Number one is lack of sleep and rest. A lot of people who are very much into gaming, they'll go late into the night. And so one of the things you'll notice is when they wake up early in the morning, number one, it's hard to wake up for Fajr. Number two, it's hard to wake up for school. Number three, even when they wake up for school, they're very difficult. Like, you know, they haven't had enough sleep. They cannot concentrate and focus in class either. You see that? That's problematic. Number two, poor eating habits. And it's not just that they're not eating properly, but one of the things that I think is very important to family life is that at least one meal in the day you should have together as a family. And when you're having that meal as a family, no screens or no technology on the table. You're talking to each other. You're sharing about each other's lives. And you're relaxed. You know, I'm finding that a lot of the times, even when we say to ourselves that we're going to sit as a family on the table, we're there, but we're not there. Yeah? We don't devote attention or time to the conversation. It's like, okay, get over it. Let me just finish my food. I need to go somewhere else, right? And the ability to be able to devote attention to that family life, it simply goes away. 3, decreased personal hygiene, not really caring, for example, about how they're groomed. And 4, lack of exercise and the lack of outdoor activities. So going to family gatherings, going to the masjid, going out into nature, playing with their friends that they used to play with. There was a time when kids played soccer in the neighborhood, or they went outside and they played with each other together. But when gaming becomes excessive, you know, there's a lack of those outdoor activities. 5, attention is always on video games. So sometimes you find that even when you're setting time limits, the time limit has come to an end. But even after that time, just thinking about the game. When they meet with their friends, what are they talking about? They're talking about the game, how to get the new level, how to get, for example, something else. So the attention is completely on the game, even after the time limit has passed. Decreased academic or work performance. So grades are suffering, homework is not getting done, studying is not getting done, because either the time is not there or the attention is not there. Now, these are things you want to keep in mind. Because when it comes to negotiations, and you want to talk to your children, they'll say, what's wrong with it? And knowing these things helps you help that conversation. Now you go up to the child and say, I'm noticing your grades are going down. I'm noticing you're not spending time doing homework. I'm noticing you're not coming to family gatherings. I'm noticing that you're not saying your salat properly, for example. These are things you want to remember. And lack of socialization in the real world, right? So even I've seen them in family gatherings, they're very much irritated. The fingers are tapping. And they're just kind of waiting, when can this end so that I can go back to my virtual world? That's the impact of gaming on quality of life and behavior. Impact of gaming on psychology. And I'll tell you one thing before I go into this, is that we really don't understand today what the impact of gaming is on psychology. I think we'll understand that 20 or 30 years from now. We do understand a little bit. There are some areas which are debated, for example, is it having that impact? Is it not having that impact? But really, for example, having 3-4 hours of dedicated time playing some of these games, which are high intensity games, right? Stimulating the nervous system at such a high level of intensity, how is that going to affect our psychologies? That's something we'll find out in you know, maybe a decade or two. 1, reduced attention spans. I've told you before, it's not just what they are doing, but especially for kids who are growing up, it's what they're not doing, right? All that time that were spent on gaming, for example, 2 to 3 hours, was time that in the past was spent on doing what? Was spent in the past, for example, in being creative. You know, when kids play with dolls or they play with Lego, it's not just playing, it's developing their creativity. And the question is that time that we have taken away from them, it's affecting them cognitively. Do they have the same creativity or not? You take the same child and give them a ball, they don't know what to do with it. And I remember when, and you remember that, when we were growing up, you know, you gave us a ball, we knew exactly what to do with it. Nobody had to make teams for us. We knew how to make teams. We went out, we played, right? Creativity is being lost. Memory is being lost. And attention span is also being lost. You know, when children are sitting in social gatherings and they're forced to sit there, one of the things they're developing there is something called attention span. Because they have to sit there and listen to adults. It may not be exciting. It doesn't have so many changes to it, right? But they're developing their attention span, right? When they're involved in gaming and they're missing out on these activities, their attention span is also being affected as well. Right? So 1, we're seeing reduced attention spans. 2, aggression and violence. Now, I put a question mark next to it because, you know, there's a lot of research out there that says that it does create more aggression and more violence, and some that says it has no impact on aggression or on violence. Rather than going into the debate, let me mention 2 things to you. First thing is that there's no doubt that some of these games, like Fortnite or Call of Duty, they reward you for repetitively engaging in violence and aggression, for being ruthless, for being merciless, or as it says, for being bloodthirsty. Okay? That's there. Whether that affects you in real life or not, but that is there. Secondly, they normally look at, for example, children who are older. I'd be interested to know what happens for children who are younger. There's a case where, you know, a young child, let's say between K to 2, yeah, was in a class and they were hitting other children there. And the psychologist I spoke to, he said, well, we kind of scratched our heads, like, why is he doing that? We kind of talked to him. And then we came to realize that, you know, he plays online games. Over there, he goes around hitting people, and he's okay with that. And he can't make the distinction between the virtual world and the real world. So when he comes into the real world, he also thinks that's okay to do as well. If they're not getting hurt online, they're not getting hurt over here either. Okay? So I'd be interested to look into that. Objectification of women. So women who appear in many of these games, they are actually presented with a particular appeal. They are presented in a particular manner that objectifies women. And those who grow up in that kind of a context, and the media does that, advertisement industry does that, they no longer think of women as human beings. They think of women as objects for a particular purpose. Instant gratification, right? You've heard of that. Nowadays, everything is instant. Our coffee is instant. Our ATMs provide us things instantly. But the culture of gaming also creates a culture of instant gratification. What's instant gratification? I do something and immediately I'm rewarded for it, right? You know, I just have to work a little bit for it. I know exactly what I need to do for it. I do it, I get rewarded for it. They come into the real world expecting the same. You know, if I studied right away, I should be rewarded for it, right? If I prayed right away, I should be rewarded for it. Like they'll come to you and say, okay, I prayed my namaz, I don't feel any different. Because they live in this culture of instant gratification. The next one's very interesting as well. Inability to deal with real life problems, okay? So when you go into the gaming world, I mean, the path is very straightforward. These are the things that you need to do. And once you pick up the skill to be able to do that, to be able to get to the next level, you apply that skill, do it enough times, and what's going to happen? You get to the next level. And that becomes hard-coded, that as long as I know something and I do it, I'm going to get there. Let me ask you something. Does that happen in real life? No. Even if you're a really good businessman and you apply your skill, there's chances you'll make it, there's chances you'll not make it. Sometimes it takes a very long time. And you just have to be able to deal with failure. You have to be able to struggle in life. In gaming, the struggle is very short-lived. So when they come in the real world, there's a real inability to deal with the struggles of life. And then finally, anxiety and or depression. So, you know, when you're talking to your children, you also want to talk to them about why they go into gaming. For some children, I find, they go into gaming because they're running away from real-life problems. Yeah, they're being bullied. There's problems in the relationship, for example, in the marriage between parents. They don't have a good relationship with their parents. They don't want to deal with the stress, the anxiety of it, or the depression of it. They go into gaming, okay? So some people, for example, will go shopping. Some people will go alcohol. Some people will go drugs. They go into gaming, right? It doesn't really help them to deal with those problems. So once they come out of gaming, guess what happens? The anxiety and the depression just gets worse and it comes back again, all right? These are some of the impacts of gaming on psychology. All right, if that wasn't enough, we talk about the impact of gaming on spirituality. I've listed some points over there, but I just want you to think about some of these points. Number one, a lack of real purpose and focus in life once gaming becomes very, very excessive, okay? There's one person who says, okay, gaming is a small part of my life, all right? But otherwise, they're really focused in the rest of their lives. But when it becomes excessive, I find that there's a lack of real focus and purpose in life. And most of the times you'll find they're struggling, not because they can't come out of gaming. As that man said, I don't have any other focus. I don't have any other purpose in life. Gaming becomes laho. Number two, lack of interest or attention and time for spirituality. So reciting the Quran, coming to the masjid, For example, saying salat. Now, I tell a lot of parents that I firmly believe 75% of the battle is just keeping them away from negative influences. You get that right? The rest of it, teaching salat and sawm and come to the masjid, that's just 25% of the battle, right? Now, when the mind is hardwired to have instant gratification, it's addicted to gaming, for example, right? Finding interest and attention and time for spirituality becomes very, very difficult. They may also engage in repetitive unethical actions, right? So, for example, killing, cheating, lying, stealing, sometimes sexually inappropriate actions as well, in very few of the games, but that's there, and behavior in the game. So what do I mean by behavior? By behavior, I mean, for example, being arrogant, right? The psychologist I spoke to, he said that when they go in the gaming world, they become almost gods or lords in the gaming world. They have so much strength, they have so much power, and they also use their strength, they use their power. Then sometimes when they transition into the real world, you know, they identify with that character online. When they come in the real world, they can't separate it. They think, ah. So as a parent, when you come and tell them, you know, Baba, time to, for example, do the dishes. It's like, who are you? You don't know me? In Call of Duty, I'm, right? And for example, Fortnite, this is what I'm able to do. Like, how can you? That little bit of arrogance that develops in there sometimes, that's one of the effects of gaming. Other things in there as well, you know, one of the research I was reading, I came across the fact that, now, I'm not saying it definitely creates this in the child, but just for you to think about, so when they're playing Call of Duty, right, there are, for example, medals they get. Medal number one was something like you're bloodthirsty. Number two, ruthless. Number three, you know, you're not compassionate. Like, these are the medals that are out there. It may play down the consequences of a sin or a mistake. Think about this. So I'm finding that with a lot of our youth and teenagers, you know, in a game, what happens if you die? What happens in a game if you die? They say revive, restart, and you go back to the beginning. What's the big deal? I made a mistake, I'll go back and I'll make up for it. And then they think real life is also like that. I made a mistake, but what's the big deal? I will go and make up for it. And in real life, sometimes you cannot go back and make up for it. They may resort to unethical means also to support their addiction, right? So if they're really addicted to it, then sometimes I find that they may even lie to you. They may even hide things from you. They may get angry at you. They may get irritated with their parents as well. I mean, the moment you take them away from the console, you will hear a lot of anger coming out at that moment. And we have to think about how to deal with that, okay? I'll come to it today. It's not a power struggle, you know. Helping our children with gaming is not about a power struggle. If you're going to get angry, then I'm going to get angry. If you're going to show your strength, I'm going to show my strength. That's not going to get us anywhere. But how do we deal with that? And they may be influenced by other unknown gamers, right? The Prophet of Allah says, "Al-mar'u 'ala dini khalilih." A man lives by the religion of what? A man lives by the religion of his friends. فَلْيَنْظُرْ أَحَدُكُمْ مَنْ يُخَالِلْ. Now one of you should see whom is he taking as a friend. Some of you are very careful about the friends your children have in the real world because you want them to have a positive influence in the real world. Question, do you know who their friends are online? Some of these games, like even Roblox, which is a game that kids play, right? Children, like very young kids play, right? Even they allow for chat. And if you turn that on, now your son or daughter is chatting with somebody and you don't know who that person is. It's not just a security risk sometimes, but it's also a spiritual and ethical risk as well. Okay. Whoops. So, just to bring this up for you, this year in 2018, in June, the World Health Organization, it recognized problematic gaming as a disorder, so it's called a gaming disorder. And they also defined it as well, and they said it's impaired control over gaming, so the person can no longer stop gaming. Even if they're trying to stop gaming, they just cannot control how much gaming they do. Number two, it takes precedence over other interests and daily activities. So it starts taking precedence, for example, over eating and socializing and doing their work, whether it's at work or at school. And number three, continued escalation of gaming despite negative consequences. So the person knows this is bad for me, but instead of stopping or reducing it, they continue to escalate it despite knowing it's bad. Now here it becomes a disorder or it becomes an addiction. They say it should happen for about at least 12 months before you can classify it that way. But here are a few questions you want to ask yourself. Number one, are they not being able to wake up for Fajr, or they're not able to wake up for school in the morning? Then we have a problem and we need to have a conversation. Number two, lack of interest in homework or outdoor activities. The moment you see grades are slipping, right, that's a sign we need to have a conversation over there. It's not very, very complicated, very simple things that you look for. Number three, lack of interest to spend time with the family. Like I say, that family dinners, family gatherings, going to see uncle, going to see auntie, for example. Number four, unable to leave the game or the console, right? The moment you tell them, all right, your 2 hours are up or your 1 hour is up or whatever it is, for them to separate themselves, very difficult. Or for example, even if they separate themselves, the moment you go to sleep there, they're back at it, or they take it into their room. They're unable to separate themselves from it. And number five, changing priorities, purpose in life, and changing values in life, right? So things like you see them, you're starting to use a lot more profanities. Like, where are they getting that from, right? You start seeing them talking about things that normally we don't talk about in the family. All right, question, you know, where is that coming from? Okay. So setting the limits. Children need help, all right? I'm emphasizing that because between the ages of 13 and 18, their frontal lobe is still developing. Our frontal lobe has developed. It gives us the ability to control our emotions, the ability to control our impulses. They're still children. Sometimes they need guidance. They need help from you to be able to control their own desire for gaming, for example, or other things. The most important point I've made there is that before imposing limits and saying this is how it's going to be, it's very important to have conversations with our children, right? Before telling them, and I'll talk about how to have those conversations. A conversation is not like, okay, I just want you to sit down and I'm letting you know that this is what I've decided for you and I'm just kind of having this conversation to let you know. No, it has to be a two-way conversation. You know, on one hand, they have to understand why you're setting the limits. And number two, we'll talk about it. Even setting the limits itself, both of you should have ownership over it. You know, they should also feel that they played a role in defining the solution. Okay? Number two, so most children will engage in video gaming. There's two approaches you can take. And depending on which scholar speaks to you, they might also give you two approaches. One approach is to say, you know what, no gaming in my child's life. And if somebody wants to take that approach, I mean, you know, that's the choice they have made. I respect that. Or you can say that, no, we'll allow for gaming, but responsible gaming. All right? I think that for many of us or for many of our children, we might just come to realize that, you know what, gaming is going to be a part of their lives. If we deny them at home, guess what happens when they go to their friend's home? Right? It's like, let's make up for everything that we were denied for at home, right? So can we have a responsible, you know, agreement over gaming? Number three, remind them that it is a privilege. It is not a right. It's not like food. It's not like shelter. It's not like clothing that they have to have it or going to school. Gaming is a privilege. They may get it. Sometimes you may take it away. They have to earn it. They have to show responsibility. They have to show they can be trusted as well. Okay? It's a privilege, not a right. The limits apply inside the house and the limits apply outside the house. I mean, what's the point that you say, okay, only 1 hour of gaming inside the home, but once they go out, they do 3 hours, right? We have to apply them outside the house. Now, decide the following limits. These limits are important. Number one, what? So which games are they allowed to play? And which games are you not comfortable with them playing? Number two, when? What time of the day? And what do they have to get done before they can play games? Right? This is all part of being something, being a privilege and not a right. Number three, where? Are they allowed to play in their rooms? Right? Can they be in private space and play the game? or do you prefer that they play in public space? Number four, how much? What is the time limit and how are you going to track it? Now, it's one thing to say, okay, you can do it for an hour and then nobody knows when it started, has it been an hour? How are you going to track it? Okay. So first, let's come and talk about the what. So each game nowadays, if you go online to buy the game, it has normally a rating. And this rating is put out by a board known as the ESRB, I think Electronic Software Something Board. Okay? And they've got five ratings out there. So E is for everyone. E10 plus is for everyone, 10 and above. T is for teen, M is for mature, 17 plus, and A is adults only, 18 plus. What's my recommendation, or our recommendation, is that you stick with E, the first one. Anything above E, you need to look into why has it been rated like that. What's the reason? Is it because of the violence? Is it because of inappropriate imagery in there? And then you have to ask yourself, is that something in line with the values of our faith? Is that something in line with the values of our family? Now, one thing to keep in mind, the ESRB, the board, it comes up with the rating. Guess who applies the rating to the software?
The industry,
the company itself, right? They're the ones who are going to apply it, right? So how do you think they're going to apply it? To get maximum crowd or minimum crowd? Maximum customers, right? So keep that in mind, number one. And number two, recognize that the ratings are applied based on social norms, right? So, for example, in society, for a lady to dress up in a particular way may be the norm. But the question is, in our faith, is that a norm? Is that something that's acceptable, for example, to objectify women in that particular way? Right? Keep that in mind. Number two, when? When it comes to when, there's two things I want to keep in mind. First, not early in the morning. Why not first thing in the morning? The mind is fresh. Let them use it for something productive, right? Let them use it for their homework or something else. And not late at night. Why not late at night? Right, because it's time to sleep, right? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, وَجَعَلْنَا اللَّيْلَ لِبَاسًا وَجَعَلْنَا النَّهَارَ مَعَاشًا. The night is a covering for you to rest. Let them rest. And the day is a time for you to acquire your livelihood, right? So not first thing in the morning when the mind is fresh. Not last thing during the day when they have to go to sleep. And two, after they've done their homework, their chores, they've done their prayers, for example. So I'll share with you in our family what we do. You know, my kids, they're young though. You know, they only get half an hour per day, not more than that. They're not into gaming, but they like to watch things. We need to know exactly what they're watching. So they watch it in public space where we can see them. We know what they're watching. When they come home, I recognize they're tired. I can't tell them, oh no, go and do your homework now, right? They've already done 8 hours of study. So let them have 15, 20 minutes. It'll be timed, okay? And then I'll say, okay, you take a break now. Once you've done your homework, you've done your chores, you've cleaned up your room, put your things away, you've said your salat, then you can have your extra 10 or 15 minutes after that, right? That's how we kind of break it down. But after those things are done. And in terms of, we'll come to that inshallah. Where? So in public space, not in their room, right? And one thing I spoke about last time when we had a session on technology, I say that even if they have to charge their phones or they have to charge their tablets, should have a public space where they can come and charge it, right? And you talk to them about it and say, look, you know, we don't want, for example, you know, somebody to message you and say, hey, I'm up on Fortnite, you joining or not, right? Because then it becomes hard for them. Nobody else is watching, it's late at night, just one more, you know? And that's how games are. It's just one more, right? And you play that one, you're like, you know what? One more. And before you know it, that one more has turned into like an extra 15, 20 minutes, half an hour. Time has passed, right? To take those impulses away, let's make sure we do it in public space. And number two, not using headphones so that we know exactly what's been spoken about when they are playing the games. Sorry, I'm going through this a little bit fast. Any questions? We'll come to the end on that. Okay. The question is how much of it as well, right? How much gaming are we okay with? So number one, set the limits in context of other screen usage. If they're watching YouTube clips, if they're watching other things on the screen, for example, well, keep that in mind when you're setting the limits for gaming. Number two, I believe that the limit should be the same on school days and also on holidays as well. If it's only good for them to have it 1 hour a day or 2 hours a day, makes no difference whether they are at school or they are in the holidays. Number three, so the Canadian Pediatric Society sets the following guidelines. It says from children under the age of two, there should be absolutely no screen time. And I know that's difficult. I might have shared this with you as well. When our little son was like 7, 8 months, sometimes somebody would come to my wife and say, you go say salat and we'll take care of your little boy for you. And sure enough, she says her salat and she turns around and how's this lady taking care of the little boy? And just give him the screen. I said, well, but if that was the purpose, then we didn't need you. We can give the screen as well, right? But no screen time. Zero screen time under the age of two. From age of 2 to 5, 1 hour daily maximum. And 5 plus, 2 hour daily maximum. That's their guideline. If you were to ask me, I think more than 1 hour is too much. Even if they are quite old, right? You know, a mu'min has a purpose in life. There's a time in life for them to be praying, a time in life to be doing work or studying, a time in life to be resting. And yeah, there's a time in life when they can do something that they enjoy doing, the hadith says, which is halal and not and permissible. Well, more than 1 hour for that, I think, is too much. All right, the last slide. Working with those who are addicted to gaming, how do you claw back the time and the restrictions as well? So number one, I think it's important to recognize that it will take time to transition to the new limits. I don't think it's appropriate to expect that they'll be able to transition from, let's say, 4 hours a day if they're doing that, or 3 hours a day, down to 1 hour a day. Okay? I mean, even Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran, when he wanted to prohibit alcohol, first, Allah said in the Quran that, look, from grapes, what do you take? You take intoxicants, وَرِزْقًا حَسَنًا, and you take a goodly risk and sustenance from it. Meaning what? Intoxicants are not رِزْقًا حَسَنًا. Number two, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that, okay, when you come to prayers, لَا تَقْرَبُوا الصَّلَاةَ وَأَنْتُمْ Sukara, don't come to prayer when you are intoxicated. So 5 times a day before that time, you have to make sure you're not intoxicated. Then the third verse comes and says, فَجْتَنِبُوهُ. Now come in, completely stay away from it. Why? They were addicted to it. And it wasn't possible to get them to transition, you know, and not use alcohol overnight. So Allah made it gradually. You've got somebody who's excessively into gaming, you can't just bring them in and say, well, you know, I heard the Shaykh today, he said this much time, so that's it, this much time. It's going to be difficult. So number one, set a time period for implementation and review. You know, when you're having that conversation, you say, we're going to try this out for 2 weeks. We'll see how things go. After 2 weeks, we'll do another review of it. And then we want to decrease it more. 2 more weeks, decrease it more, and see how it goes. Okay? Number two, find new activities and purpose for children. So let's say they were doing 3 hours of gaming. You cut it down to 1 hour. What are they going to do for the other 2 hours? You've got to find some new activities for them, you know? And children have to be involved in other things as well. It's not like, okay, you go figure out what you're supposed to do now for the other 2 hours. You know, go play, I'll buy you some toys. No, activities. Children should be involved in community. They should be involved in volunteering. They should be involved in giving charity, sadaqah, right? We grew up in societies where elders came and taught you giving charity. Well, we've got to teach our children to be involved in giving charity. To go outside, to play, to be a part of nature, to play soccer, for example, involve them in other activities. And number three, provide cues and reminders to help them in the transition. So for example, if the hour is coming to an end, you tell them, well, 5 more minutes to go, right? So they know it's coming to an end. It's not like they're in the middle of a game, it suddenly stops for them. Okay. This part is important, if I'll just have your attention for that, and then we will, inshallah, end, is have a conversation before setting the new limits. I've numbered the conversation because this is how you want to have the conversation, okay? You know, we're not against the child. We're not fighting with the child. We're working with the child. We're not walking ahead of them and pulling them. We're right next to them, helping them walk it. Okay? Clearly, if they're struggling with gaming, if they knew how to get over it, they would have gotten over it. Like, they know that their grades are slipping. They know, for example, their relationships are suffering, right? So if they knew how to do it, they would have done it. The reason they haven't done it is because they're struggling with something in there. So we want to be able to have that conversation with them. This is how the conversation goes. Number one, you go and share your concerns about gaming in their life. Look, I'm noticing that you're struggling waking up in the morning. I'm noticing your grades are slipping. I'm noticing you're praying really fast. I'm noticing you're getting very irritated with your mother. I'm noticing you're not there when we're sitting at the dinner table, right? I'm noticing these things. Share your concerns about gaming. Two, this is important. Listen to their concerns for why gaming is important. Because I guarantee you, you go and talk to a child and you say, look, this is too much. We need to claw it back, right? Immediately, you're going to hear a whole bunch of excuses, right? Everybody else is doing it. I get to connect to people with it. It helps me with my eyesight. It helps me with my thinking. You know, I get much faster with it. You know, brings down my stress levels. Why can't I do it? I only do it this much. Others are doing it, right? A whole bunch of good reasons. And there's, for example, research that shows there's some benefit to gaming over there as well. Well, listen to their part as well. Because one of the things that, you know, if you just go and impose something on a child, they'll be like, look, my parents didn't understand it. They don't understand it anyways. They don't know how good this is. Well, tell me how good it is. I want to know. Like, why do you enjoy it? What's the excitement in it? Okay. Once they tell you all of that, the third part is you remind them that the negative impact far outweighs the positive. Right? Even Allah says in the Quran, alcohol, there's some benefit in it. Gambling, there might be some benefit in you. But the sin of it, the harm of it, far greater than the benefit. Remind them of that, all right? Here's the most important part. All right, together, let's work out a solution. Yeah? You give me a solution. What do you think is the answer to this? Is this game okay? Is it not okay? Is this much time okay? Is it not okay? How often can we have conversations about what you're playing, for example, right? You know, when a child feels that they're part, they made the suggestion, yeah, they came up with the solution, the chances that they're going to keep it is much, much higher, right? And that's important for us to keep in mind that we are working with them to develop the solutions for the problem. One of the things I like to also keep in mind over here is that whenever we're talking to children and we're negotiating with them, sometimes we may think that compromise means that I'm happy and the other person is also happy as well. One thing I've learned after 8 years of being, you know, in this profession is when you make a compromise, nobody is happy. Yeah. I'm not happy because this is not where I wanted it to be. He's not happy because it's not where he wanted it to be. But that's how it is in a compromise, right? And it's okay if they're not happy. Right? So they come and say, for example, well, you know, two and a half hours. So I think 2.5 hours is a little too much. How about we bring it down to 2 hours? Okay? You're not happy, but then again, I'm not happy either, right? But let's work on 2 hours. Give it a week or two, and we'll review it after that. A negotiated solution may work far better than one that is imposed upon them. All right. I'm going to open the floor now to any questions.